Professor Roderick Tremblay is a prominent Canadian economist who is now a professor emeritus at the University of Montreal. In the late 1970s, he served as the Minister of Industry and Commerce in Quebec in the government, and he was also president of the North American Economic and Financial Association and president of the Canadian Economic Society. He's authored about 25 books dealing with economics and finance, and including his most recent, The Code of Global Ethics, 10 Humanist Principles. And it's nice to have you with us today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Farias. I have trouble hearing you. I wonder if it is my phone or yours.
Okay, I'll push my mic and ask my New York engineer to push the mic up. I'll push mine up as loud as I can so you can hear me, all right?
Yeah, I can barely hear you, but we can proceed.
All right. I'm going to ask you to do more of a detailed explanation for us of what ethics you believe we're lacking. We tend to fragment ethics into many sets of laws that have been defined by the different religions by and which believers adhere to. However, now with more integrated planet, with more and more interconnectedness between governing bodies and corporations and interpersonal bonds of mutual interest being formed on the internet, there's a universal aspect to humanity as a whole. Rather than simply a collection of different groups and ethnicities and races, and this requires a different kind of ethical code. So what is your opinion best distinguishing between the religious morals of the past and what you believe are the humanistic morals of the future?
Yes, you framed the question very well. And of course, this is a very difficult question to answer in a few words. That's why I wrote that book, the Code for Global Ethics.
But take your time. There's no rush. Take all the time you need.
Well, most people think, and I believe you do too, that the world is going in the wrong direction. Presently, it has been going in the wrong direction for many years, I think. We live in a world of controlled by greed, by corruption. The rule of law is pushed aside. And there's a lot of insecurity in people's mind. Where are we going? How are we going to solve our problems? And as you just mentioned, many of our problems now are global in nature. And we don't have global solutions. We don't have ways to approach them. And we do the same mistakes that we repeat the same mistakes we made in the past. We thought after 1945 that wars had been abolished. But now wars are back. We thought that financial crisis, destructive financial crisis, had been controlled. But now they are back. And I was listening to you when you were describing how people are suffering now and nobody seem to care. That's part of the problem. I approach the problem from an economist's point of view, not from a technical point of view, but from a moral point of view. Mind you, Adam Smith was a moralist, and David Hume was a moralist. So economists are used to thinking in terms of common good and how to solve problems and improves people's happiness and people's lot. The problem with many of the established religions that they are in contradiction with many new knowledge that we have developed over the last four centuries. I will mention only four of them. Galileo proved in 1632 that the Earth was not the center of the universe, but we were just a little part of it. This created a new vision for mankind. Humans are not the center of the universe. This has been an invention that has been proposed, but it's not true. And if we base our morals and thinking on false presupposition or assumption, this is dangerous. Then Darwin in 1859 showed that humans as living species are not unique. They are not some godlike creature destined to live forever. They have evolved over millions of years from other living creatures. And this creates another perspective to where we come from and where we are going. And then in 1953, when James Watson and others discovered the DNA, the molecule, the DNA molecule in our 46 chromosomes dictates a lot of things how we behave. This was a devastating knowledge. And that knowledge was even more devastating when we learned that human beings are sharing more than 95% of their DNA genes with chimpanzees, showing that the kingdom of living beings is not controlled by humans as such, but we are part of the of nature, of living natures. And I will add also a fourth development, and this is going on nearly on a weekly or monthly basis. The way scientists are learning more and more how the human brain functions. Mind you, many of the old religions have always pretend that the human body and the mind are two separate entities. This is a falsehood. The human body is a total organism, and the brain is, of course, our computer. The new research shows that different parts of the brains generate different thoughts, including religious thoughts. And we are learning more and more about that. For example, just last week there was a study published in Europe about near-death experiences that people have reported. And there's been a study over many years of a large number of people involved in that experience. And they discovered that the main reason why people had hallucination when they were near death is because they had too much CO2 in the blood, too much carbonic gas. And this could explain why they were seeing lights and they were thinking that they were talking to gods and things like that. So the way the brain functions, now we are learning more and more how the human brain functions, and that would be helpful to solve some diseases in the future, but it helps us to understand how we see the universe. So I wrote that book, The Code for Global Ethics, to show the weaknesses first of the old morality that comes from us to us from the old organized religions. I criticize their basic flaws. I can mention four or five or six of these flaws, and I contrast that to what could be a humanist society in the future, looking at the planet and humanity as a whole in this universe. As far as the religious approach to morality, it's a double-edged sword. And it can either help people, but it can hurt people. First of all, many religious morality is in-group morality. They say don't kill, don't steal, don't lie within the group. But for other people, the infidels, the outsiders, the excluded, the same code may not apply in the same way. I mentioned, of course, the fact that many religions think that human beings are the center of the universe, which is contrary to scientific knowledge. A third weakness or a third flaw is the fact that, and it is especially true in Christianity, since Saint Augustine in the fourth century, define separation between personal morality and public morality. You have to remember that for the first 4 centuries of Christianity, Christianity was sort of an outcast religion or even a cult. It's only when the Roman Empire made it the official religion of the Roman Empire that it became an imperial religion. As a matter of fact, most of the large organized religions are imperial religion. They grew because they were connected to a political empire or a military empire. This is true for Christianity after the 4th century. This is the same thing with Islam after the 7th century. And of course, Judaism is a bit different because it has not been a proselytist religion, but it has been involved in many wars and many conflicts. So that separation between personal morality and public morality, in other words, you cannot kill as an individual, but as a head of state, you can kill. I mean, that separation didn't exist before the 4th century, but it seems to be existing today. The fourth rule is the question of the invention of hell that many religions use to terrorize people, and not only that, but to exclude people who are not part of their inner circles. That includes 2/3 of humanity who are not either Christians or Islamic, because I consider that Islam and Christianity are the two most imperial religions nowadays. A fifth flaw that I could mention, and I just repeated what I just said a few minutes ago, the fact that you separate the mind from the body create false thinking about how human beings should see themselves and how they should behave. And I would add a sixth is the question of the treatment of women as in the main organized religion.
We're continuing on in just a second with Professor Tremblay. Go to GaryNull.com or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Please continue, sir.
Not being equal of males, and this has a lot of consequences regarding education. Women are not educated as a rule. In many Islamic societies, this is a tremendous loss and tremendous injustice. But even in Christianity, for example, the clergy in the Catholic Church is solely male. This goes back to Adam and Eve, when all the problems of the original sin was put on Eve of having created evil in the world. So a lot of propaganda has been placed on the head of women. And even before the religions, these two religions that I mentioned, there was in the Greek philosophy, the story of the Pandora box, where a woman, Pandora, had opened a box and had liberated all the evils in the world. So there's a long tradition in philosophy and in religion to debase women, to denigrate them, and to deny their rights. So I think all these defects are influencing our way of looking at problems, how to solve problems. And I think if we want to survive as a species in the future, if we don't want to be the dinosaur of the future, we have to change our moral viewpoint. And I think if we approach our problems from a humanist point of view, where we apply the principles of equality between human beings, the dignity of human beings, when we apply the need to share with other human beings, and all the other principles that are outlined in the book, I think we'll be in a better position to face these problems and not only solve them, but to prevent them from happening. A lot of problems can be prevented if you apply the right prudence and the right thinking.
I have one more question for you.
I resume. I've done a small summary of what the content of the book is, but that's the main outlook of my message.
I think it's a very, very outstanding message, and I compliment you for this. I have one more question. Now, you've just explained how religious morality has led to a polarization between morals targeted to individuals versus a separate code of morals, or a lack thereof, that is assigned to collectives such as governments and corporate leaders. By the way, I'm sure you heard Goldman Sachs's Blankstein claim he is doing God's work in Wall Street, a statement that should receive an award for one of the most ludicrous examples of hubris during this decade. And what it does tell us about the sense of morals among the oligarch elite in Wall Street and government is that they live by a separate standard, like the people going off to the Crusades, whether they were Islamic Crusades or whether they were Christian Crusades. The outcome was the same for those that they were victimizing. Our planet is shrinking. It is more integrated than ever before. In fact, some suggest that we should no longer use the word globalization for what is happening, rather we may more probably speak of having already reached a state of globalization. But for the vast masses of humanity, appreciating and the rationale and understanding that they don't count. The majority of people cannot see themselves fully as simply citizens of planet Earth, but identify with some form of sectarian identity, a particular class status, a citizen of a nation, or an adherent to a particular religious faith. So what can be the means to educate people in the university of a set of ethics based upon our globalized world when the majority of humanity and even many leaders are not awake to this? That is your final question, please.
Well, this is the you frame it very well. We are really behind our times. I mean, science and technology are advancing much faster than our moral dimension and our moral capacity to look at them. And we seem to go from one extreme to the other. We discarded communism, which was a very bad system, a political system, but we went the other way to a complete individualism, in a sense that everything goes. You mentioned Goldman Sachs and other financiers who made and are still making billions of dollars through different techniques and tactics, and mind you, I have a blog that has explained many of these bubbles and financial crisis. It's called the newamericanempire.com/blog, and the last blog was about financial abuses and financial excesses. You mentioned that we need to teach the young generation, the children, to look at the problems from a global point of view. Ever since 1969, when we had that picture of the man on the moon and looking at the planet Earth from space, we realized that we are on the same ship. All humanity is on the same ship. There may be difference in cultures, difference in languages, difference in interests, and all that. But globally, we are on the same planet, and we are going to face the same problem. If there was a destruction of the planet, we would be destroyed as a species, as human beings. This may happen in the future. Whatever you do, you know, the planet Earth has been hit in the past. Before the disparition, the extinction of the dinosaur by big meteors hitting the Earth. It happened twice in the last 300 million years. It could happen in the future, but at least we should prevent the destruction of the planet through our own means, either nuclear or pollution, as we are doing today.
I thank you very much for your insights. Hopefully people will take the opportunity to read The Code for Global Ethics, 10 Humanist Principles. My guest, Professor Roderick Tremblay, T-R-E-M-B-L-A-Y. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.